How's it going, wrestling fans? We are here again. This is actually the second podcast we are making of the day, the fourth episode of Marking Out with Mike overall. So if you haven't listened to the first three episodes, obviously it's wrestling reviews. Obviously it's by a wrestling fan for fellow wrestling fans, or maybe somebody new. Hopefully I can teach some newer fans some things that they possibly did not know. But we are here for you, and we hope that you enjoy the content. Like I said, this is actually the second episode of the day. So if you haven't had a chance to go listen to the other one, but maybe you're up on these two, the first one that I did was a recap for Victory Road. It was the special that aired on Impact Plus this past Saturday night, and it was a good pay-per-view. There were three title matches. The tag team champions were in action as well, but their titles were not on the line. They will be on the line at Bound for Glory, though. So if you like Impact or you're new to Impact and you want to learn about Impact, I encourage you to go and listen to that show. So the purpose of today's episode is going to be a recap of last night's pay-per-view, NXT TakeOver 31. But before we get into that, just like all the episodes, I start with a little story time. I got some news and notes that we run through, and we talk wrestling, guys. This is a good podcast to be on. I don't try to be no high and mighty wrestling hipster. I try to keep it smart. I try to keep it relatable, and I always keep it factual. So again, if you go back, pretty much if there was a show the night before, if Impact, WWE, any of their three brands, or AEW have a show, you're going to hear about it here. We do even talk about indies. We talk about stuff overseas like New Japan, Stardom, all that other wrestling, Ring of Honor. But in terms of the weekly reoccurring content, WWE, AEW, and Impact Wrestling are our main focuses because they are the most readily available. If you ever hear anything, you hear me say something that doesn't sound right, you're like, hey man, you know you can go download the Ring of Honor app, Honor Club, and listen to their shows and watch their shows too. Help me grow as a wrestling fan, because as I said, that's my intention, is to help other people grow as fans, and let's grow together. So whatever platform you listen to this on, subscribe if you want to. I don't really chase subscribers. I just like seeing each of my episodes get more and more plays. It lets me know that the channel is growing and that the exposure is out there. But we're available on every platform you can imagine. That's why I say I don't really worry about subscribers, because there's no way I'm checking them all. So I podcast with a really awesome website. It's called Anchor, and they do all that shit for me. They blast it out. They put it on Google. They put it on Apple. We're on Overcast, Spotify, everything else that you could possibly imagine on. We're on. We're on everything that you can think of. I am not aware of a place we are not. So we'll jump right into it. We'll do the news and the notes, and then we'll talk about NXT TakeOver 31. And I have to say, spoiler alerts ahead. So if you have not watched TakeOver, and you don't want to be spoiled, sometimes I'm bad about remembering to tell people spoilers, but I hope that if you're on my channel and you're listening to my content and you can hear the sound of my voice, you are aware that if it's a recap episode, it's probably going to have spoilers. So pause it, come back to it later, watch TakeOver 31 first, and then come and see us. And if you enjoy the sultry sounds of my voice and you want more of it, we will have another new episode. We don't normally put out two a day, but we will have another one tomorrow at some point on Tuesday. I will pump out another episode. We will do our Raw review. I will simplify it, break it down. You don't got to go through all the commercials. You don't got to sit there for 3 hours. I'll have the highlights, my opinions and thoughts and more. So today on YouTube, it was just published by Chris Van Vliet. He had a sit-down interview. It's about 30 minutes long with Jazz, the former ECW and WWE superstar. She also had an appearance earlier this past year with AEW in a battle royal. And she was in NWA. So she's been staying relevant and doing her thing. But a little half-hour interview where he sits down and he talks to her about her life, her husband, Rodney Mack, and some other things. And one of the most interesting things she says in there is that she, as of this past Sunday, has had her last match. She's saying that she's retired. He does kind of play and poke some fun at her and say, "Hey, are you retired? We all know how wrestling retirements go. Are you really retired?" And she goes on, she elaborates and explains that she originally had intentions of doing like a 2020 farewell tour where she was probably going to hit some indies and do some things, but Corona happened and she wasn't able to do that. She is still involved with a wrestling organization in Texas, and her and her husband run a thing called the Dog Pound, where they train people. She was the NWA Women's Champion for 490. I have it. I wrote 948 days, but I know that's not right. I was dyslexic. I believe it was 400. I don't know. She had the NWA title for a long time, though. I'm really mad at myself for screwing up that note. So she went out on a pretty high point, you know, going down there and doing things with Billy Corgan and his company. She says that she still may tour in 2021 if her schedule allows it, essentially if Corona allows it. And then Van Vliet goes on to say, "Hey, you know, I thought you were tired." And he's just being playful with her. And she says if she does anything in the ring, it's going to be like 45 to 60 minute bumps. So she's not planning on doing anything physical anymore. It sounds like she's the days of her putting on full length matches are behind us. So, you know, check out her stuff that she's doing in Texas, though, and check out that interview. It was very interesting. And she sounds like she's really easy to get a hold of. So I don't know if she's on Twitter or anything, but you could probably reach out to her there. So today, October the 5th, marks 23 years since Brian Pillman's death, which was very tragic. Obviously, his son, Brian Pillman Jr., we've been seeing him in AEW a lot. Don't believe he's actively on the roster, but he's on AEW Dark a lot. He'll be on there this week. But so I thought it would be interesting for younger fans or for fans who maybe just weren't aware of the details. Because I'll be honest with you, for the longest time, I thought Brian Pillman's death was a suicide. For some reason, I thought that he had taken his life. I didn't realize that it was just a freak accident. So I grabbed a little excerpt from his Wikipedia page that I'm going to read verbatim. So that way, fans that don't know can kind of get the details or get more details if they only know the loose details. So I'm not going to read his whole wiki. I'm just going to read just this one little part. So it says, on October 5, 1997, Pillman was scheduled to wrestle with Dude Love at the WWF pay-per-view In Your House 18, Bad Blood. Steve Austin relayed that Jim Cornette was instructed to find the whereabouts of Pillman. Cornette contacted the Budget Motel in Bloomington, Minnesota, where Pillman had stayed the previous night. He was told by the receptionist that Pillman was found dead in his hotel room by the maids earlier in the day at 1:09 p.m. Central Time. He was 35 years old. An autopsy attributed Pillman's death to a heart attack. However, Austin explained that this was caused by previously undetected heart disease, a condition which had also taken the death of Pillman's father. So, sounds like it was like a hereditary problem that didn't get diagnosed and unfortunately died. I mean, 35 is still the prime of your life. I also didn't know he was that young, so pretty crazy. I mean, again, that's from Wikipedia, so the details may be a little scattery, but yeah, it said that he and Stone Cold were good friends. So, yeah, 23 years that he's been gone now. In other sad, but way less sad wrestling news, and I say way less sad because it has to do with a television show. So it's still sad, but it is not anywhere along the lines of someone losing their life. So the popular Netflix show Glow, which was, of course, based on Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, the popular all-female wrestling organization, it was actually canceled by Netflix. This was reported today. It had just been announced that they would be renewing it for the fourth season. So Netflix has got this thing now where they have been, unfortunately, canceling shows that seem to be doing really well on their platform for absolutely no reason. It doesn't make sense. I know that there were a lot of wrestling fans that were liking it, but there were also just pretty good actors on there. I forget what the guy's name is, but the comedian guy, Mark, I can't, his name's escaping me, but the guy who plays like the leader of Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, I know that a lot of his fans who weren't wrestling fans were watching the show. They also did this with non-wrestling show Santa Clarita Diet, which starred Drew Barrymore and was doing great numbers. It was like a zombie comedy drama. And they just canceled it. They left it on a huge cliffhanger, and we're just never gonna know what happens. And that kind of stuff's super annoying. I really liked that show, and I really like Glow, but Glow is not a go. Three seasons, and they are done, son. WWE, I believe this was yesterday, put out a tweet asking what each brand should do with its number one pick, which, of course, the draft is starting this week on SmackDown. Originally, it included all three brands. So it had Raw, NXT, and SmackDown. They were questioning what those brands should do. Pretty immediately, though, the tweet was actually taken down and then reposted. And it was the same tweet verbatim, except it only included Raw and SmackDown. So it sounds like NXT might not be included in there, which is really weird, just because. I feel like NXT was kind of like the farm system, but now it is not so much the farm system. They're kind of like a third brand. They're doing their own thing. And I'm trying to get the link to load up, but my phone does not want to cooperate. I'm going to try for a couple more seconds here and see if I can pull it up. But Bleacher Report had put out a headline today. That claimed that Triple H was actually unclear as to whether or not NXT was part of the draft. So, you know, that could be a work. That could be him just staying in kayfabe and acting like he doesn't have any idea what's going on there. But so here, I got it to queue up. I was trying to play a video before, which is why it wasn't working. So Triple H says he's unsure if NXT will be part of the WWE draft. Right, Ryan Satan says Triple H still says he does not know if NXT will be part of the upcoming draft. And then there's some stuff on Twitter. It's that same thing that I just referenced. And so, yeah, it's really interesting that they're going that route. I talked about it in the last episode, which came out earlier today. After the main event of TakeOver 31, which we'll get into, both the participants, Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly, were taken. So WWE had announced that Kyle O'Reilly suffered broken teeth and was being evaluated for additional injuries, while Finn Balor was taken to the hospital to see if he suffered potential facial fractures. It seemed like a fake report at first, and even Triple H had mentioned that they were potentially being evaluated by about broken jaws. Seeing as how it is the next day and nothing further has seemed to come out, I'm just going to assume that in this moment, it's all part of storylines, maybe to advance that the guys worked really hard. And the broken teeth thing seems weird, though, that you would say that. I don't know. That doesn't, I don't know. But that's what does is being reported there. So as of October the 4th, yesterday, that marked 400 days that Kaylee Ray has reigned as the NXT United Kingdom Women's Champion. As of today, October 5th, it marks a very interesting milestone for SmackDown Women's Champion Bayley. So in Bayley's current reign, she stands as the longest reigning SmackDown Women's Champion. You do remember that it is a fairly new title. And so she's been champion as of today for 359 days. But that's not the note that I wanted to bring up. As of October 5th, today, between her two title reigns as SmackDown Women's Champion, she's been the champion for 500 total days. So I'll be curious to go back later and see how many days the SmackDown Women's Championship has actually been in existence. But Bayley, is setting records out there. 359 in this individual and 500 days total. So she's dominating that division. It's said that Vince McMahon is a big fan of hers, very high on her. And then in another piece of WWE news, on this day, October the 5, 97, Kane made his WWE debut by, of course, infamously going down and ripping the door off of this Hell in the Cell to reach the participants inside. For tonight's Raw, very little has been announced, but pretty much the only thing that's been announced, it's believed that they're not really doing anything on tonight's episode because it's believed that there's not much direction planned for the draft this year, and nobody really knows what's going to happen, and so it's being described as like a filler match, like a filler show. So Raw tonight could potentially be fairly boring. But the one only match that they have announced so far is a six-man tag team match. It's going to be the team of Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, and Bobby Roode facing off against the team of Drew McIntyre and the Raw Tag Team Champions, the Street Profits. So obviously, there's the known history between Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton. I'm wondering, Bobby Roode just popped up all of a sudden again. Is this a one-off, or is this possibly going to lead to him and Ziggler feuding for the Raw Tag Team titles? It's not completely out of the blue. Him and Ziggler have teamed in the past, so their teaming somewhat makes sense. And I'd be okay with that. There's not a lot of action going on. Bobby Roode more than definitely deserves to be on TV. But they have talked a lot about James Storm possibly making a WWE debut at some point. And so it'd be interesting to see if they do a thing where maybe they reunite and form Beer Money again, or whatever they would call that incarnation in WWE. But it's also interesting because sometimes WWE doesn't acknowledge history that was created in shows that are not their show, because they want to be the king of the mountain. And so, it would be interesting. I'd like to see James Storm. I like to see, it seems like the relationship between Impact and WWE has gotten better. Not really to the point where they'll do talent exchange, but WWE talks about them in their documentaries now, and they don't ignore them and try to act like they don't exist, similar to what we see them try to do with AEW. So, we'll see. Today on Twitter, Nia Jax put out a tweet indicating that she and Shayna Baszler will be back on tonight's edition of Raw. So, of course, they did miss Clash of Champions, possibly because of a diagnosis where it may have been believed that they may have been showing signs of COVID. Obviously, they haven't, because if so, they should have been quarantined for 14 days. There was no further mention. It could be a tease, though, because she said a bunch of stuff implying that Shayna Baszler was pregnant, which is obviously not true. So I think Nia Jax just likes to troll the fans, because fans are really, really mean to her. And I talk about that in the other podcast that I recorded earlier today. And that segment really talks about what Bea Priestley is going through, and a lot about how we're seeing guys like the Young Bucks and Will Ospreay get off of social media because of the way that fans treat them. And I'm not going to go through the whole rant again, because if you've already listened to it in that one, you don't have to listen to it again. But essentially, it's how, as fans, we sometimes think that we're entitled to treat people a certain way, and that's obviously not the case. And I just kind of make a case about why we shouldn't cyberbully superstars, regardless of our opinions of their characters. And maybe you go back, maybe you look at it, and maybe you don't. So Jack Gallagher is in the news again. He was the cruiserweight wrestler that wrestled on 205 Live for a while. He was the British superstar. He had the Mary Poppins kind of thing going on with the curly Q mustache and the umbrella. I mean, he was a good talent. He seemed like a good talent, but he was released from WWE back in June after he was accused of sexual misconduct. So he had lost his job. He didn't say anything. WWE washed their hands of the situation. And I think some of us forgot about it. So for the first time, he's speaking out about the incident. And this is not to defend him or to take a side. This is just news, and we're reporting it. And you can make your own judgment call. But he states in his statement that in 2014, he was at a New Year's Eve party where he met a woman, and he says his behavior towards her was inappropriate. He says that he had a lot to drink that night, and the fact that he had been drinking heavily that evening, plus the fact that 6 years had passed, had created a situation where he didn't remember what had happened that evening. He then goes on to say that he isn't drinking, he is not using the drinking as an excuse, and he expresses regret and he says that he is sorry. So, might have just been a little PR move to earn good favor. I don't know directly what he is accused of. I believe it's just, sexual harassment. I don't know if he touched, assaulted, or did anything further. But either way, if someone felt uncomfortable, the information is out there now, and he has lost his position in WWE because of it. And so here we are these months later now with his thoughts on the matter. And let's see if I still have this piece up. So there was an incident where a up-and-coming indie professional wrestler had tragically lost his life. And so today, New York City criminal court records have been updated to reflect that Lu C. Vu, a man arrested following the death of New York City independent wrestler Matt Travis Palacios, who had died last year, pled guilty as of September the 4th to reckless driving and failure to exercise due care, which caused serious injury as well as a failure to yield to a bicycle. Obviously, serious injury because someone died as a result. His license had been revoked for 6 months following that fatal car accident. So tragic because it could have been avoidable. I did get the article up from PW Insider. So if you want more information on that, they did post that earlier today, just after 12 o'clock. So you can go on there and you can see what exactly the updates are. But that trial was originally supposed to start on October the 19th, but several delays in COVID have, caused it. But it's a really weird incident because right now he's only had to pay a $250 fine. And that was only because of his failure to yield to a bicyclist. So, no word yet if he's going to be charged with involuntary vehicular manslaughter or not. But obviously, that has to be looked into a bit further because the fact that a man flat out died because of it has to be more than just $250. So, we will see what exactly they decide to do with that. In a little more topical, a little bit more lighthearted. So you may remember at AEW's last pay-per-view, Matt Sydal, aka Kevin Bourne, or Kevin Bourne, Evan Bourne, had come out during a battle royal, and he was going to hit his big spot, go to the top rope, and hit the shooting star press that he's known for. For those of you who don't know, Daly's Place, which is where AEW films currently, is in Jacksonville, Florida. It's an open-air arena, and if you've ever been to the South or Florida specifically, you know how humid it can get. And it is sticky and slippery, and unfortunately, he botched the move super badly, but they've decided to kind of turn it into a little lighthearted storyline. So Evan Bourne, or Matt Sydal, had gone on Twitter on Sunday afternoon, and he had posted that he's facing Michael Nakazawa on Dark this week, and he accuses Nakazawa of using the baby oil that he's infamously known for and putting that all over the turnbuckle in an attempt to sabotage him in that match. And so it makes sense. It's super silly, and everyone knows it's a work, but it makes sense. And then today on the episode of BTE that they put out on YouTube, they tease it a little bit more as well. So could be some little small buzz to kind of get things going there on the takeover, or excuse me, on the AEW Dark. So we're gonna jump into the results of NXT Takeover here in a moment, and talk about everything that happened there. So we know that that was WWE. It was they come out of Full Sail, and now they are doing the shows for the foreseeable future at the Performance Center, which has been rebranded as the Capitol Wrestling Center. And it's also Wade Barrett's first involvement in a takeover because NXT wasn't really a thing when he was coming up, and it was just basically FCW. So that was fairly interesting. But yeah, Capitol Wrestling Center, as I talked about earlier on the last podcast, is a nod to the old territory days, because that's what that region was called where before WWF took over. So cool little nod. So the show ends up opening up. The first match on the card was the North American title match between Johnny Gargano and Damian Priest. And I knew what was going to happen. And as I talk about all the time, I'm a mark. So I marked out for my favorite wrestler, and I ended up getting this wrong. So both Johnny and his wife, of course, had title matches on NXT 31 on the TakeOver special. So there's a really interesting opportunity for both of them to be champions. Of course, Johnny has held every singles title as well as the tag titles in NXT. So I thought it could be cool with the whole Gargano Knows Best thing to see him and Candice LeRae possibly both as champions. But we will talk about it in a moment if that was the case. So one thing that stuck out to me, and this isn't just AEW, I noticed it in Impact as well. Or excuse me, it's not just WWE, but it's Impact as well. You don't notice it in AEW because it's an outdoor arena. But sometimes in these emptier arenas, you hear echoing because there's not enough crowd noise or bodies in the room to kind of dissipate the sound waves. And it's weird. You know exactly what it is, but it takes some getting used to. No matter how far we are into the pandemic, it's still hard to wrap your head around 2020, and we're still going through this. So it was nice to see real humans in the crowd tonight, or what we're told is real people. So the layout in the Capitol Wrestling Center is they have the LED boards all around like they do in the Thunderdome. But instead of having them go floor to ceiling, the bottom section, there's like these pods. They're plexiglass, and then they have steel around them for some reason, kind of like a cage, and there's people in there. And apparently it's a mixture of performers and like talent from the performance center, like up and coming wrestlers. And then also it is got friends and family of the talent. So there's a little bit of criticism because people were taking their masks off indoors and no one was really reprimanding them for that. But it was cool to see real people in there. And it was just a visual, like a very different thing. And I doubt how safe it is, but WWE is not ever going to tell you that. But it looked cool, and it added a change of pace in a time when things have gotten really stagnant because of the COVID conditions. But we always hear that the fans and the wrestlers are tested before they enter. So hopefully that's true, and hopefully everybody was safe. So at one point during one of the quicker exchanges, Damian Priest, he's got a quick exchange going, and he's hitting Johnny with the moves, and he's coming back for more, and he ends up running off and going to the second rope, similar to like he's going to hit a lion salt or some, you know, some fast move off the second rope. But I don't know if Gargano was out of position or what exactly happened, but he like got on the rope and then awkwardly just literally stood on it for a second. And then I think Johnny got in position and he turns around and he like bounces off the rope and hits him with a forearm. So the timing seemed to be off on that. It stuck out to me, especially for two guys that are pretty good workers, especially Johnny Gargano and even Damian Priest, who took a while to grow on me, but I am a fan now. There is a spot outside where Priest tries the Razor's Edge, and Gargano is able to slip out of it. He gets him in a roll up. It's like a two count. He kicks out. It continues. And then later the action spills to the outside, and Damian Priest is actually able to hit a Razor's Edge. And it was really amazing because he is standing outside the ring near the commentary table, and he like throws him sideways onto the ring apron, which we always hear is the hardest part of the apron. But it looked safe. It looked visually very appealing, but it felt like it was safe. Like he wasn't just haphazardly throwing him around and destroying him like some wrestlers do with the buckle bomb. So it was pretty cool to see that. And we know Johnny loves his big spots. He loves to go out there with guys like Tommaso Ciampa and just get a big pop out of the crowd. So then there's another incident where there's two security guys out there, and Damian Priest takes them out. And while the referee is distracted by that, there's some cheap shots. Gargano goes to, later in the match, set up Damian Priest to dropkick him from the ring apron to some stairs that were positioned outside. We'd seen a similar spot at a previous takeover event, but they go ahead and they avoid that. So there's super a lot of teases. It seems like Priest is going to fall, but he avoids further damage. Priest eventually gets inside the ring, hits Gargano with the Reckoning, and goes on to reclaim his NXT North American Championship. So I was bummed because I like to do this thing. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me on there. My handle is Mike S. Flanagan, so M-I-K-E-S, and then my last name, F-L-A-N-A-G-A-N. I do this thing where I will predict, you know, the wins and losses, and I'm usually pretty good, but I marked out for Johnny, and I got that one wrong. I actually finished 2-2, so we'll go through that here more. So the next match was Kushida versus the Velveteen Dream. And just almost immediately, it seems like because of the accusations against Dream and the fact that he's been accused of grooming underage people for inappropriate contact, the vocal fans online on Twitter have seemed to really fall out of favor with Velveteen Dream. And it also seems like WWE management has as well. Because there's got to be some truth in there somewhere, because not only has he got these accusations, but he had the whole thing where the nudes accidentally leaked out. And I don't know about you guys. I know that in a younger generation, like, leaking and having those types of photos on your phone is common. People will send them to girls and people they're talking to and stuff like that. But most of the guys I know don't like to have those types of photos of themselves on their phone. I don't know. Velveteen Dream's a good-looking guy, and he's in good shape, so I guess if you got it, flaunt it. But it just seems strange that in a world where you're famous and you know that people are possibly gunning for you because they want to take your spot, it just seems like you'd have some more self-awareness than to possibly have photos like that that can leak. We've seen it happen to people, like, unfortunately, Paige and others. I think it's even happened to Big E, where those photos get out and, you know, Paige has never come back from it. People cyberbully her all the time, and it's crazy that, like, we call ourselves fans and then we're like, oh, you made a video in your private time among consensual adults, and now we're going to shame you and berate you for it forever and ever and ever and ever. And I mean, the stigma is that these people who are being these jerks on the internet, people who talk about fighting on the internet, are typically people who can't fight. People who sex shame and body shame and things like that are typically people who don't get laid. And it seems like an easy insult to just fall back onto those things, but it also seems very accurate when you look at these profiles of these people. And I'm not condoning it or trying to bully. It just is like, you got to know as a fan. You know, I talked about it in the last episode. You can't cross that line and think you're entitled. They're playing good guys and bad guys. You're not. The person you portray on the internet is who you really are. And it doesn't matter if you say otherwise. So you need to be the truest, most accurate definition of yourself. But like I said, it seems like Dream's fallen out of favor with the fans and even WWE themselves. So before the match starts, there's some mind games and Dream gets like this powder in his face and he gets all rattled and he grabs a chair and it seems like the match isn't going to happen, but the ref is able to obtain order. He gets the chair away from him and the match eventually starts. Kushida has control during most of the early part of the match, and I was like, wow, are they gonna, you know, squash this guy out? Like, is this what your direction they're taking with it? And there's even one point where Dream is literally begging Kushida off. He's, you know, no, leave me alone. And so it seems like it's going to be a flat out squash. So later on, the action is outside the ring, and Velveteen Dream slams Kushida into one of the pods. It was a pretty cool spot. It allowed us to see a close-up look of the pods. And Dream, I noticed, was wearing like a super weird outfit. So like, he's wearing like, I guess, kind of normal pants and shoes and then no shirt. But his hair looked super funky because he got like the powder. So his hair was all white. And then he looked like he was wearing literally the yellow dish gloves that like your mom would use when she's doing chores around the house. It seemed really weird. I don't know what that was all about, but it was a good match. And so, Kushida was super violent in the match. There was one point where he targeted Dream's shoulder and rammed his shoulder into the corner post twice. So Kushida was outside the ring. Dream was kind of hunched over within the turnbuckle post itself. And Kushida pulled him once. Then he writhed in pain. He grabbed him again. He pulled him in there again. And then Dream just kind of laid there limp. And the way his arm placed, the arm that was being targeted, it fell to the outside of the ring. Well, he was kind of between the second rope and the top rope. And Kushida was actually able to drop kick the stairs. Well, his arm was like kind of trapped in between the stairs. So that made like, you know, he was just out for violence. We've seen him do like the Marty McFly Back to the Future thing a lot. So it was cool to see him kind of like be more aggressive. A lot of fans thought it was supposed to be like a heel turn for him. I didn't necessarily agree with that. I think it was supposed to be like he was focused and things like that. So yeah, he drop kicks him into the stairs. His arm is trapped, and then they go back into the ring. And then he puts him in an arm bar. That seems like it's going to end the match, but Velveteen Dream slips out of that. Later, he hits him with a second arm bar. That one's in the center of the ring. And then again, Velveteen Dream somehow slips out. He goes and hits him with the Dream Valley Driver, so that kind of shifts the focus, puts the action into Velveteen Dream's favor, and then he goes up and he does his flying elbow drop, the Purple Rainmaker, really beautifully executed. And he hits that from the top rope, and then he's in pain, though. He's supposed to be in too much pain from what he's contracted earlier in the match. And so it prevents him from making a quick cover. And so he finally kind of goes in there and gets the cover. One, two, and Kushida kicks out and the action continues. So Kushida gets him in another armbar. Dream is able to lift him up while he's still got him in the armbar, puts him up, hits another Dream Valley Driver, and it looks like that's going to break the hold, but he actually holds on through the Dream Valley Driver and gets Dream to tap out to the armbar. So pretty unique, interesting way to end that match. I liked it. And then something I noticed in the match is, and you've probably seen a lot of people talk about it, when they cut to the side, you could see the announcer's table, and the announcers were Beth Phoenix, Wade Barrett, and Vic Joseph, verbally. And you could see Vic Joseph in the middle, but there were two people next to him that were obviously not them. The girl was like a Latina woman, and she had red hair, so definitely not Beth Phoenix, who I apparently hear is broadcasting these from home. So it just seemed weird. Like, they could have just had the table off camera and just implied that they were there. But it was a really bad job because, like, there's no way they didn't think that it was going to be caught by fans, that people were going to see it. I'll tell you right now, spoiler alert, those announcers never get involved. Nothing happened, so there was no payoff. There was no reason for these people to be there. And they didn't even fake it. They didn't, like, pretend to speak. They just stared at the monitors all night, which was super awkward. And Vic Joseph was actually out there commentating. But it was super, super, super weird. So after the move, Kushida continues to attack Velveteen. He keeps the armbar on him for a while and he keeps making him tap. So I think that's why some fans thought it was a heel move. And I guess on NXT, we'll find out soon if it was a heel move or not. I don't think it was. I just think it was just him finally getting his moment. Because he also didn't seem to have like his... Dream did call him Marty during the match, like as a joke, but he wasn't wearing his like Marty McFly jacket and things. So I think maybe he's shifting. Who knows? And then he said some like stuff on Twitter about it afterwards. So then they showed a really cool commercial. You guys know I've talked about it in other episodes. I like action figures. I like the WWE action figures. And Mattel has a stop motion commercial now with the Elite figures. And it's just a really well-done commercial. They aired it a couple of times throughout the show. But after that match was the first time. Then another cool commercial with Shotzi Blackheart where they announced that Halloween Havoc is going to be the next pay-per-view. It's going to be an NXT pay-per-view. It's going to take place on October 28th, so right before Halloween. So that'll be really fun. That's going to be the first time that the Halloween Havoc name was used in 20 years. Of course... That is a pay-per-view that's kind of synonymous with Dusty Rhodes. Cody Rhodes, his son, had tried to file for the trademark, and the fact that he was denied the trademark and WWE had obviously no interest in using the name, and then suddenly for the first time in 20 years uses it, it has some fans kind of thinking that maybe WWE is doing it in a let's stick it to them kind of way. And maybe they are. Who really knows? But I mean, I don't know. Fans like to really pretend that there is more to a situation between a rivalry between the two shows than I think there really is. But, you know, that's the speculation. And regardless, that's the pay-per-view. It's going to be there. It's the first time in 20 years. And Bleacher Report is just now posting, as of about 20 minutes ago, that Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax will be defending their tag team titles tonight against the Riot Squad. So it looks like it is confirmed that the tag team champions will in fact be on the show. So it's no longer speculation. It's not a Twitter tease. It looks like they will indeed be on the show. So after those commercials air, we see Johnny Gargano. He's backstage and he's talking to his wife, and they don't really say anything of note. It's just him hyping her up and pumping her up for the title match later in the night. The next match is the Cruiserweight title. So we see Isaiah Swerve Scott taking on the champion Santanos Escobar, who I still wish had a mask just because it was a little more flavor, but he's a good worker. So it is what it is. So Swerve matches a lot of the champion's actions early. He had just celebrated his birthday earlier that past week, and he kind of hits him with the Lucha Libre style of his own. I think kind of saying, like, whatever you can do, I can keep up with you. And worth noting, the Cruiserweight title must be 205 pounds or less. Swerve came in right there, weighing in at 201. So right there on the cusp. And I wonder, you know, how much legitimacy is actually used in there. But, yeah, 201 to compete in the 205 Cruiserweight. So, later in the match gets started. A lot of outside action, and there was some outside action in this one as well. Escobar ends up hitting a big old suicide dive while Swerve is on the outside, and the dive ends up slamming both dudes into the pod. There's the chain link fence, and you hear the shh, like the whole little steel cage kind of rattling sound. And then they get back in the ring, and there's a rolling thunder flatliner from Swerve, which is a really cool move. That earns him a two count, so it's a near fall. But the match continues. Later on, Escobar's little sidekicks come out and they provide a distraction. And that seems like that's going to be the way that the match ends. But Swerve is able to kind of fight it off. They don't get involved physically, but they distract the referee. But Swerve is able to, you know, avoid getting pinned. And so the match continues. And then Ashotzi, or what is his name? Ashitzi? I don't even know how the guy's name is. But the little buddy comes out. And he ends up fighting the two sidekicks to the back. So then it's just the two men left in the ring. And then back inside the ring, Escobar hits a Phantom Driver. And that seems like it's going to be the final nail in the match. Seems like it's going to put it away after all the near falls and the big moves outside. Suicide dives, the outside interference and all that. But Swerve kicks out. And it just kind of keeps on tugging on the emotions. You're like, oh, is it going to end? Ooh, near fall here, near fall here. And so they get one more crazy near fall attempt. There's a big 450 splash. Looks like we're going to get ourselves a new champion. Like I said, his birthday passed. I was like, maybe it's the feel-good story. But the champ kicks out. And then there was a spot where one of the bars that connects the turnbuckles to the post, the pad had become removed. So it was just the exposed steel, which we're supposed to believe is super deadly, even though all the steel is exposed on Impact Wrestling rings. They don't wrap that portion of the ring. And so with that turnbuckle being exposed like that, they did a spot where he like fell back, and the timing was off, but at least it was a safe spot. So it didn't look very good or very realistic, but it was supposed to be that his head hit the top of that exposed turnbuckle, like connecting piece, post, whatever you call it, and then Escobar was able to get him inside and roll him up to retain his championship. So the next contest after that was the women's championship match. So we had Candice LeRae versus Io Shirai. And I was torn on how I thought that match would go. I ended up being wrong in my prediction, like I was with the opening contest. But some really cool stuff. So some standout notes that I have here. At one point, Candice LeRae hits a really perfectly executed lion salt. She flies off the second rope with that, you know, backwards jump. And it looked perfect. I'm so used to people botching those moves, especially when Priest ended up kind of botching his attempt earlier, where it seemed like his timing was off in his match with Johnny Gargano before he hit that forearm off the second rope. So that was really cool, and that stood out and kind of got a pop out of me. And then there was a pin. There was a rope break there. And so Candice LeRae had Io Shirai in a, like, a crossface. Or, no, what do they call it? The Gargano lock. Mm-hmm. And as she's, like, kind of trying to get her to tap out and everything, she gets to the ropes, and it's supposed to be she holds on. The ref's issuing the five count. One, two. And as Candice breaks the hold, she, quote-unquote, inadvertently strikes the referee. And we come to find out that Mr. Gargano, Johnny Wrestling himself, runs out in a referee shirt. So it might have been a Gargano's knows best, a little underhanded tactic to get out there. So he runs out in his ref shirt, and he goes to issue the fast count, and I was like, ooh, this will be good, because I thought 1, 2, 3, new champion. And so he goes, and he barely hits 1, and Io Shirai kicks out, and he's instantly pissed, because you can tell he's, like, orchestrated this plan with his wife. No, that was supposed to be it. Knock the referee out. I come out 1, 2, 3, new champion. You win. I love you, baby. Gargano's no best. We rock. We rule. Cleveland versus the world. But didn't quite work out that way. So it was 1 count. So Johnny Gargano is upset. He goes out to ringside over the timekeeper's area, and he actually grabs the women's championship. He throws it in the ring. The actual sanctioned referee of the match gets up. He wakes up pretty quickly. He didn't milk it like they do sometimes. And he starts arguing with Johnny Gargano, and he even says, that's my shirt. That's my shirt. Like, about the ref shirt. That was kind of funny. And so while they're arguing about attire, Candice is able to hit Io square in the face with the women's championship, and she goes for the cover. 1, 2, and then Io Shirai kicks out again. So the match continues. So it's 2 little false finishes where I was like, oh, Candice LeRae is definitely winning the championship here tonight. But she kicks out, and it continues. And then she goes, the action goes to the corner. They go to the top rope, and Io, it ends up hitting a Spanish fly, which used to be known as the C4. Paul Burchill, I'm struggling with my words right now, he used to do that move. But yeah, so the backwards Spanish fly to the center of the ring. She goes back up top again, hits a really good looking moonsault, and then 1, 2, 3, champion retains. So we still got Io. After the match, Toni Storm pops up her pretty little face on the Titantron, and she cuts a little brief promo, and she lets it be known that she is back. So we've been getting teased for weeks that a former champion was going to be coming. And the way the poster looked, it centered on Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor. So we all thought it was going to be a men's champion. There was even rumors and tease and speculation that it might be Mr. Bo Dallas. I believe he was the first ever NXT champion. Nope, I said this the other day too, and I think I caught myself in the same mistake. He was the first FCW champ. Regardless, it wasn't him. It appears to be Toni Storm. She goes, and she's wearing a leather jacket, and she kind of turns to leave the screen. Then we cut to an outside shot, and there's someone on a motorcycle with a helmet that is approaching what we imagine is the Capitol Wrestling Center. We come to find out that it, in fact, is. The person walks in. They're on the ramp. It's obviously Toni Storm. We just saw her in matching attire. Toni Storm is here. It's clearly going to be Toni Storm versus Io Shirai for the Women's Championship. That's the next feud. Except it's not, because it's definitely not Toni Storm. It was a little trickery there to make us think that it was Toni Storm. Motorcycle helmet comes off, and it's Ember Moon. So that was actually really good. So Ember had hurt herself. She was on a episode of The Bump with Mark Henry and some other people, and she made it sound like she was like, oh, I don't know if I can come back from this injury. I'm definitely gonna retire. So I didn't think it was gonna be her. I'm a mark. I fell for it. And so now we've got two champs back in the ring. So the action over there, she wasn't really being used amazingly out on Raw, so it'll be good. Hopefully she can still do that little tilt-a-roo neck breaker thing off the top rope. But she's back, Toni Storm is back, and the NXT women's division is looking pretty strong these days. So then they end up cutting to backstage, and Ashotzi, whatever his name is, he's being interviewed. Same guy who came out during the Cruiserweight title match. And they're saying, like, hey, why did you do that? Did you do it because you like Swerve? And he takes a long route to say it, but he basically says, no, I don't care about Swerve. I did it because I want a shot at the Cruiserweight title. So that'll probably be coming up. He didn't say it quite like that. It was a long-winded answer, but that's where we basically ended up. So we end up seeing the main event next. And it is Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly for the NXT Heavyweight Championship. And there was speculation all day today. Is the Undisputed Era going to break up? They've been together for a long time. Two of them appear to kind of be working heel now. Two of them seem like they're starting to do the face thing now. And very interestingly, he was wearing, Kyle O'Reilly, that is, was wearing his Undisputed Era gear. All three members of Undisputed Era congratulated him and wished him good luck before the match. And he entered to Undisputed Era music. So I was like, well, maybe he's not. So the match went on. I actually didn't take too many notes on this match because this was a really good match. And I was pretty much just drawn into this match. I believe that Balor ended up kind of getting kicked pretty hard in the mouth and ended up legitimately bleeding as well. So Balor's bleeding from the mouth. It was a really hard-hitting match. There's all that kayfabe out there that maybe there was broken teeth and broken jaws and stuff. Who actually knows? I mean, the way Finn looked after the match, it seemed like maybe it could be the case. And then that seemed like it was it. It seemed like the show was going to wrap up, and that was that. They were going to do the, I'm not really a heel, and you're not really a heel, but we had a great match. Here's a handshake. You'll get him next time, kid. It was a good, showing by Kyle O'Reilly. But we then go to see Adam Cole is being brought out to the ring, hoisted over the shoulders of a very, very large man who, if they referred to him by name, I didn't catch it. But we come to find out that it's Ridge Holland. He'd been on NXT like a little bit, but he's a pretty new guy to NXT and to pro wrestling in general. So I was curious because I didn't know much about him, and I consider myself to be a little bit of a smart mark. I know about backstage stuff and not really the rumors, but I try to stay up on who these superstars are and what they're doing in the world and stuff. So what I was able to find out about him is he is a former professional rugby player over in, or from England. Obviously, he's here now. And he spent his entire career over there doing that. I'm trying to see. It doesn't look like he won any championships, but he started his wrestling career in 2016, and he must be impressive because he was signed to WWE by 2018, so a 2-year turnaround. He's 32 years old. He's 6'1". He's 251 pounds, so he's a big old boy. There's a bunch of information on his background in terms of rugby, if you want to know what kind of stats and stuff the guy was putting on. He was in the independent circuit for just 2 years. He trained under Marty Jones. He made his UK debut in March 2016. And then he was in NXT UK pretty much from 2016 kind of to now. So he went to the tryout in May 2018. He spent another 2 years on the independent circuit. It was announced that he had signed with WWE on the August 29th edition of NXT. He made his television debut. He lost to Keith Lee on that night. And then on November 21st, 2019, he made his television debut for the UK brand of NXT under the name Ridge Holland. He defeated Oliver Carter and then defeated Tyson T-Bone in January. And there's some other stuff, but for the most part, that's all the kind of relevant information. He's a newcomer, he's a big old boy. Seems like they want to insert him right up there into main card feud with a guy like Adam Cole. And, as a figure collector, I want the Undisputed Era to break up because I want their action figures to get cheaper. But as a fan, I really like the Undisputed Era gimmick, and I would like to see it carry on. I like when WWE has longevity. The idea that like four dudes can't just all be friends and simultaneously compete for championships is crazy. Like if me and my brother were a tag team and he was like, oh, I'm going to go for the main event title. It's not like we're going to be like, no, I also have interest in that title. I guess we have to break up. And that's the booking logic of tag teams. I'll never forget back during one of the original WWE drafts when they broke the Dudley boys up so they could put Bubba Ray Dudley on a singles push, which he never ended up winning a singles title in WWE. And then they put D-Von, who somehow kind of had the better singles push, but not really, because he did the weird manager thing with Batista when he first came up, and he was like a reverend. So it just doesn't make sense to break teams up with so much organic history. And I mean, Undisputed Era has a real background. Roderick Strong and Adam Cole are like real life friends, like 12 years in the making. So it doesn't make sense to break them up. But what does make sense is to let you guys know that this podcast is coming to an end. I want to thank you for listening, especially if you listened to both of them on the day that they were put out. Really appreciate you guys. It's not the plan to normally put out more than one podcast at a time. But the wrestling landscape moves fast. You saw that I had news and notes for both episodes, and I love to talk, so I can always kind of stretch it out and give you guys plenty of content to think about. But that's another show, so we're going to go home. We're going to watch Monday Night Raw tonight, see if it is kind of a sucky show, because it might be just a place filler while we wait for the draft to start on Friday night. But whatever happens, whether it's good or bad, whether it's ugly or whether it's a show stealer, we will have all the information for you. I will post my Raw recap tomorrow, along with any other news and notes and relevant information that I have come up with. And then the action's going to continue. Impact, I'm still figuring out. So I will get those as soon as I can. I will try to put them out as soon as the possible, close to the air dates. If I can watch live on Twitch, I will. But with my work schedule and that being a time I'm unavailable, typically it's probably not going to be right away. But we will see. We will see if I can try to catch these Friday night replays. If I can make sense of the Impact Plus app, then I will definitely do that. But I do appreciate each and every one of you listening. If you like what I do, I would ask that you please share this around. I want to become one of the most consistent podcasters in the wrestling landscape. I know that you have a lot of places where you can listen, and I'm hoping that my integrity and my decision to not just do things for cheap pop, I'm never going to share things. I'm never going to put crazy clickbait on there. I want you guys to know that this is a place where you can trust the sources and the news and the information and the stories that I am telling you. And in time, I want this to be a channel where you guys can hear some good interviews. I'm in the process. A lot of wrestlers have free time because of the COVID stuff. So I'm trying to use that time to line up some good interviews. I'm not going to promise you that I'm going to be on the level of a guy like Chris Van Vliet by any means. Maybe someday, I hope. But we are going to try to just keep this thing going. Maybe we'll have some co-hosts, some interviews, some Raw recaps, and some news and notes. But that's all she wrote for today, guys. We will see you later this week for the Raw recap. And until then, I'm tapping out.